Jamie Locker with you here on the Green Zone. We are live from Winnipeg, Manitoba, the home of the 112th Grey Cup being played Sunday at 5 o'clock. Approximately 5 o'clock is the kickoff.
It takes
that
a bit longer to get that game going.
Well, they got the kickoff show, of course, with Our Lady Peace. Not going to complain about that.
No.
I think it's going to be a pretty darn
good
kickoff
show.
How many
songs? Did you three or four tunes at the front end of that?
I heard it was 12 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So three tunes, four tunes.
Probably a montage of some of their big hits for Our Lady Peace. And then you have, of course, the player introductions, the anthem, then the coin toss. I'm guessing around 3:20, 3:25 is when kickoff will actually take place. Princess Autos. Don't quote me on that. They do say 5 o'clock on their website.
Question for you. Player intros.
Team. Oh, sorry.
They blast out?
I don't even think they introduce the individuals anymore after what the Riders did in 2013.
But if there was an attempt to do it the way they've done it in the past, I can't see. I think Montreal's wired like that, too. They better not be calling out player by player because no one's going to do that. They're just going to come out as a team.
I think that it'll just be now your East champions led by Mike Osher, or Jason Moss, and your West champions, head coach by Corey Mace here. This is Saskatchewan.
You know how TV schedules are set up.
Well, that's what messed up TSN in 2013 is because they had like 5 minutes set aside for the player introductions. Maybe not that long, but it didn't go that. So there's a lot of like 2.5, 3 minutes of dead space because it's to the second. Everything's timed.
Yeah.
Like the flyover is those planes, they time it, right?
Yeah.
At this time,
that's a cool touch.
There it goes. So
the other thing that I would like to point out, because a lot of people are asking us on, because we were pretty active on the Green Zone socials today, and our text is, we're live, so our text is up and running as well. I mean, I know it's a day off for a lot of people, and rightfully so, but we're able to respond to you, and we are going to be broadcasting live from Winnipeg. Right now, we're in Jamie's hotel room. Can I take my shoes off?
Please don't.
Tomorrow we'll be at Fan Fest, and we'll be doing the show all week from FanFest, and then a regular, we're doing
Green
sort of a special show on
Saturday from FanFest.
And then you, Daryl, and Belton are doing your thing
on Sunday
before the Grey Cup on Sunday, and then the post-game show after the Grey Cup as well, just to give people a rough idea. Because a lot of people are on their way here, and they're wondering where we're going to be. So FanFest opens up tomorrow.
Thursday. It opens Thursday. We will be there tomorrow setting up. All that stuff.
Don't worry. We'll sneak in.
No, Locker. Stop making promises. But, yes, FanFest gets going Thursday afternoon, Friday, Saturday. We will be live in Winnipeg all week long, starting today.
By the way, my room is better. I got a nicer room.
That's because the CFL booked your room.
I got a suite.
Ralco booked mine.
You got a flight.
Oh, yeah, right. I shouldn't complain about the room. You have to drive here and back with
a lot of questions Britain. About that.
Or
Jamie is going to the Grey Cup either way. He's always coming. Britain and I are only coming if
the Riders, get in,
which we didn't know until Saturday. So we didn't get to fly. We had to drive. And it wasn't as bad as I may have led on to believe. Britain is not a bad travel companion.
I'll see what he has to say a little later on in the show on the vice versa flip side on that conversation.
Well, his story might be different than mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And meanwhile, we continue here on the Green Zone. Quick scheduling change. Matthew Shinetti's busy with TSN. We will get him on in the next 30 minutes. He's doing a hit right now on TSN, his actual employers, so he'll join us in a couple of minutes. But right now it's time for Truth or Trash Tuesday.
I'm here to reveal the nasty truth.
I would roast you, but my mom said I'm not allowed to burn trash.
My detector test determined you are telling the truth.
I'm the trash man.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
Truth or Trash Tuesday.
And the statement is from Trevor Harris. It's our time.
Truth or trash.
Do you agree with Trevor Harris? Is this the Riders' time? Are the Riders the big dogs? Are the Riders walking away in Winnipeg holding the Grey Cup? 1-877-332-8255. Truth, absolutely. It is the Riders' time. Or we had a Pablo on from Three Down Nation Montreal. He thinks the Alouettes are the hottest team, and he believes it'll be Montreal's time again, like it was 2 years ago, to win their second Grey Cup in 3 years.
Now, leading into the West Final, you had the Riders blowing out the Lions.
They did not.
They did not. I had it being a close game. I didn't have a come from behind, anything, but I thought it was going to be, you know, like 3 points. Like a field goal separation, which is what it ended up being. I had it in the 30s, though. I think I had like 34-31 was my final score. I'm on the side of it being another close game. That East Final, I was impressed with that Montreal team.
Well, both defenses, I have this low scoring. Like I said earlier. It might be first to 20 wins. Like it might be 21-19. It might be 22-18. It could be 20. Like I think one team will get to 20 and the other won't. These two defense, they're the best two defenses of the Canadian Football League. Down the last half of the season, there's been no question. They are the best two defenses in the Canadian Football League, and Trevor Harris and a Davis Alexander on the limp are going to have a lot thrown at them on Sunday, and I almost feel like it'll be a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown that will be the difference in the football game if somebody can capitalize on that sort of opportunity. I think this is going to be an absolute slugfest. I am picking the Rough Riders. I am. But as I said, I think my score is probably going to be about 21-17, 21-19, somewhere in there for what is going to happen.
If I'm picking a team, if I'm picking a team, I'm picking, and all things being equal, and a healthy Davis Alexander, I'm picking quarterbacks. I hate to say this. I think I pick a healthy Davis Alexander.
But he's not healthy.
He's not healthy. But let me finish. Defenses, if you compare those two defenses, I'm taking that Saskatchewan Rough Riders defense all day long over. And then special teams, I might take Montreal. It's going to be a close game. And I think the deciding factor here is whether or not Davis Alexander can move, how much movement he can get.
I don't think he will. I don't think he's finishing the game. Or I don't think he's taking every snap. I'll say it all week. I think we're going to see McLeod Bethel-Thompson. Practices are tomorrow. That's going to be the first look at who's out there. Another big one for the Rough Riders side of things is Keyshawn Johnson. 1-877-332-8255 is the fan line. Truth or Trash Tuesday. Trevor Harris said it. It's our time for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Do you agree with him? Truth? Do you disagree with him? Trash on Truth or Trash Tuesday here on the Green Zone on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
Long after the thrill of living is gone.
Jamie and Locker live from Winnipeg on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope you all took a moment of reflection today on Remembrance Day, November the 11th. I will admit, hits a little bit closer to home now that I've been to Normandy. 2 years ago, we were in Europe. And
you've talked about that multiple times.
Like being there and talking to a veteran.
Yeah.
William, who's now 100 years old, who fought in World War II. It is, you think about it. I've had grandparents who were served and things like that. But when you're there and you see the impact Canadians had on Europe, like we're driving in a small town in France.
Yeah.
In our Uber.
And they know.
And there's Canadian flags flying all over the town. All their flowers and their flower beds are red and white.
Yeah.
Like how much they honor Canadians and what they meant to that region. Of course, Juneau Beach, and they press in to the community where the Regina Rifles put up that statue. I would recommend anybody.
What year did you go back?
It was 2023 when we were
okay.
When we were there. Did I get that right, or was it 12? That was the last year. No.
My grandmother went back on
no, it was 20. It would have been 2020, the spring, June of 2024. Yeah, the 80th anniversary.
The 80th.
In 44 when they stormed the beach. So last year was the 80th. So we were there last year. So this would be the second Remembrance Day since we were there.
My grandmother went back on the 75th anniversary. So she served my grandfather and grandmother on my mom's side. They met in the war, and Lois passed away a couple years ago. She died in her 90s, and my grandfather passed away in his 50s. I think he was 57, and he was in the tank brigade, and he was on the lookout. They had like four guys in a tank, and they were driving around in Norway. And the timing escapes me because, obviously when and where in the war it was. But it was in the middle of pretty heavy fighting. Sniper climbed onto the back of the tank, threw a grenade in, and his brigade, the guys that he served with in the tank, all died except him. He got blown out. Got injured and got sent home. And I remember as a kid in the 70s with my grandfather before he passed away, he still had metal coming out of him in his legs. He was hurt quite badly. One leg was like 2 inches shorter. He wore a special boot. But we'd be sitting there at breakfast and he would go, "Lois, get the can." He had a cigarette can on the back of the stove in the kitchen that he pulled all the shrapnel out of it. And Jamie, it was like there was that 3/4 inch in the bottom of the can of metal, pieces of metal that over the years forced their way out of his body. And he would pull metal out of his legs. And he didn't talk about the war much.
No, many of the veterans don't.
Never did.
They talk about the guys and like the
that they lost.
Yes, absolutely. My grandmother, she'd go through the photos and, this is, Jack and we lost him in the war and stuff, but my grandfather did not go to the war. He was one of those who went to Fort Sand because he got diagnosed with tuberculosis in the pre-war, which he survived out of that. But my other grandfather, he was overseas as a war photographer and things like that. Just the incredible sacrifice. So I hope you took a moment, 11 o'clock today or at some point.
We have very good lives. We have very good lives because of what people in our lives have done.
Well, what are we doing? We're talking about a
football game on Sunday.
We're going to be wandering around Winnipeg all week, partying it up to celebrate Canada's great game and some of the great history has to do. Like Jason Moss was talking about the 425, what the Alouettes are named after is a Quebec brigade from the war and how much it meant and means to them to have that military representation on where they're from as an Alouettes organization and the name, of course. So,
and Canada showed up, didn't ask questions, did the right thing. We were always first, and that's why we are celebrated around the world. That's why you can still put a Canadian flag on your backpack and you can go anywhere in the world just about. And you're going to get the respect. It was based on those decisions and the people that fought for
absolutely. Our freedom. Well said. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. It is Grey Cup Tuesday ahead of Sunday's game. It is the Riders and the Montreal Alouettes. And, of course, so we'll have you covered all week long. Britton Gray is going to join us a little later on. The Rough Riders are holding their players' availability right now after it was Sam Emilis and Trevor Harris who spoke last night. A few more players today. And tomorrow is the big media day, as they call it, during Grey Cup week, where the players, it's pretty much 2 hours for each team, sit and wait and answer all the questions and then go to practice, or for the one team that practices in the morning, after practice they come do their media day. That is tomorrow. Of course, awards on Thursday. The commissioner's state of the league on Friday is going to be...
That's almost going to be... Can we get...
Very interesting. That'll be streamed on CFL Plus, by the way.
Can we get in and see that? Or do we have to...
No, we can... I'm hopefully... I'll be... Me. I'll ask a question to Stuart Johnston. We're trying to get Stu on the show. He is busy, of course. Hopefully he can join us, as other commissioners have during Grey Cup week here on the Green Zone. Live from Winnipeg. Jamie Locker, live from Winnipeg, Manitoba. Home of the 112th Grey Cup to be played on Sunday. And on the sideline for the CFL on TSN is the great Matthew Schenetti, as he was for the East Final. But at the coaches' news conference earlier today, Matthew, what were your takeaways? What did you think of how Corey Mace handled himself in his first ever head coaches' news conference during the coaches' news conference?
Well, Jamie, what I first want to say is I decided, just because it's great to have the Riders back in the Grey Cup, that I would watch the 13th Man documentary, and I was reflecting on a young Jamie Nye.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you in that doc?
I am in that doc, and I am, what, 29 years old, 30 years old? That was 15 years ago.
I understand, given the context and the time it was made and what it is about, but still an incredible doc, and you did a great job, Jamie. But back to your point about Corey Mace. There was one thing about Corey Mace I think that's been true since he got into coaching: defensive line with the Stampeders, defensive coordinator with the Argos, and now in the big chair with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. He's a sense of calm and poise. Nothing's ever going to rattle him, although someone asked him if he had been to the casino lately. Given
Jim Bender. It was Jim Bender from the Canadian Press.
that's the only time that Corey Mace's eyes kind of bugged a bit, and he was like, what are you talking about? But other than that, just very calm and composed, and that's what I expect out of the Riders all week. I expect a team that's going to be very businesslike. Although two different cultures, he and Jason Moss have locker rooms that completely buy in, but the fundamental difference between the Riders and the Owls is the Owls will trumpet what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and what they're driven towards. The Riders are just going to be composed, and they're going to take care of their business. It doesn't. One isn't better than the other. One isn't more philosophically pleasing to the ear than the other. But I just think when you look at both of those coaches and the cultures they have built, undoubtedly there's a reason why both teams are in the Grey Cup. And Corey Mace comported himself quite well in his first coaches' press conference.
Matthew, I'm curious. You've been following this league for a long time. Do coaches quite often dictate the overall persona of their teams like these two coaches have in the past, or is this a fairly unique situation? Because I think on both sides, and you just sort of spoke to it.
I think with both of these, sorry to cut you off, but I think with both
teams,
I think it's important to kind of realize that we've entered an interesting era in the CFL. 7 of the 9 coaches in the league are former players. Obviously, the Argos don't have a coach right now, given their whole situation. And Scott Milanovich is currently the coach of the Hamilton Tiger-Cats. But every other franchise has a head coach that was a player in the CFL. So these guys understand what it's like to build a culture. Many of the coaches in the league have either won a Grey Cup or been a part of Grey Cup teams on coaching staffs. I mean, maybe it's 6 of 9. I don't believe Mark Killam played. But irrespective of that, culture is very important, and how these guys own their cultures authentically is also important. Corey Mace is a big guy, big bravado, but a very quiet, very quiet operator. Jason Moss will tell you straight to your face, and he did today, that he feels that he performs much better when he's emotional. Yes, he's had to tone it down a little bit over the last couple of years as the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes has talked to Davis Alexander about this. But the one thing that I think that's important, I asked Jason Moss about this today, and I've asked him a few times, which is at some point they have to give the culture to the players. The players have to own it. Yes, the coaches have an idea of what a culture is and how it should be implemented. But once they hand it off to the players get to get an opportunity to build on it, to evolve it in their own way. And I think that's really, really important when you're looking at both of these coaches. And how does it differ from what I've seen in the past in the CFO? Well, I think about coaches like Kent Austin, like Chris Jones, where the culture was, I'm the coach and you do as I say. It's very different now. These coaches have come in, Corey Mace being a former player, a former defensive lineman in this league, he comes in with that respect. I've done it. I've seen it. I've won in my position. You can trust what I'm saying. Jason Moss, his tight relationship with Ricky Ray, all of the accomplishments he had as a quarterback, but also, too, the accomplishments he had as an offensive coordinator, particularly with the Ottawa Redblacks. He comes in with a resume, and guys can look at him. Davis Alexander can look at Jason Moss, as he has said, this is the best guy who's ever coached me. So they bring an aura of respect, and the cultures they have built are truly authentic.
Matthew Schenetti of TSN on the sideline, of course, for Sunday's game. The Alouettes being pretty open. Davis Alexander and Jason Moss for what we usually get, which is we'll monitor it and that's about it. But they're being very open about that hamstring injury.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to last all week, or do you think they're going to start locking down the information, Matthew?
I think they're going to lock down some of the information because Davis Alexander certainly has been quite transparent that he needs 4 to 5 treatments a day. Let's not kid ourselves. When I was watching him during the East Final, this is a significant injury. And I'm not saying that I'm the problem, but in 2 of the 3 games I've covered that Davis Alexander has started, the one game earlier in the year was the game that he really aggravated his hamstring and was out for months and told me that he was very close to being out for a year. And now I'm watching him in the East Final, watching him late on in the fourth quarter, after he got hit by, I believe it was Devin Barista, coming off the sidelines, talking to the Owls medical staff, touching his hamstring, getting on the bike, testing it out in the cold weather in Hamilton. It is concerning, and as transparent as they're being, and how could they not be, because everyone saw that it was a hamstring injury and knows that Davis Alexander has had a hamstring injury. But their game plan, how they protect him, is going to be important. And I asked Jason Moss this yesterday, could we see more than 2 quarterbacks? Obviously, they use Shea Patterson on short yardage. But more than 2 quarterbacks would bring in the McLeod-Bethel-Thompson factor. But Davis Alexander has so many tools that, frankly, McLeod-Bethel-Thompson doesn't have at this stage in his career. Mobility, power in his get-off, the way he drops back way in RPO situations, he can diagnose and get off quickly if he wants to hold, keep the ball. That's all going to be tested by the Saskatchewan Roughriders because the Hamilton Tiger-Cats, that's exactly what they were trying to do. They were testing Davis Alexander and his legs all game, and ultimately led to him holding on to his hamstring late on. This is the most significant injury storyline, if not one of the biggest storylines going into this game, because Davis Alexander is dynamic. Certainly he has the attitude. Undeniably he has the talent. But if he's 3/4 of the player and that starts to diminish in what will still be cold come Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, it will play a factor on the game and likely Jason Moss's decisions.
So Jamie is pretty much convinced that McLeod-Bethel-Thompson is going to play on Sunday. And I think the more conversations we have about it, I'm almost convinced we're going to see him. How much do you think, if you had to bet on it, Matthew, how much are we going to see him versus Davis?
Sure, that is the most important question if you're a Montreal Alouettes fan, if you're watching this Grey Cup as an interested third party, and I mean anyone watching this game, quite frankly. But I think what you see and what you're going to see is this Al's offensive line is going to have to protect Davis Alexander and limit the amount of times that he runs, because I truly believe the more that he has to run, the more that he has to pivot, the more that he has to plant, the more that he has to juke and feint and get out of the way of oncoming defenders, is the percentages of his hamstring and where the integrity of it will go down and down and down and down. Because, you know, in my other life with the Canadian men's national team, there are 2 important players in the men's national team who are dealing with hamstring injuries. And I texted one of them today, Liam Miller, and asked him about his injury. Now, every grade of injury. Is it the tendon? Is it close to the bone? Obviously, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, but there is something about how tenuous hamstring injuries are. And Liam Miller, plays for the men's national team, plays for Hull City in the English Championship, told me 4 or 5 days after you initially injure it, it feels pretty good. And then you get on the grass, and you know right away it's not great. And they're not playing on grass. They're playing on turf, which certainly has a factor in some of these non-contact injuries. But beyond that, this is something where that treatment and the kind of treatment he's getting and what they do before the game is so critical. This isn't like, you know, a sore muscle that maybe you take a painkiller for. This is the most important tendon in your leg. And if it goes, you can't move. So I would be lying if I haven't thought the same as you two, that we will see McLeod Bethel Thompson. But all of the pressure, all of the expectations going to be in that Al's offensive line to extend the amount of time, if that is the case, that Davis Alexander is playing on Sunday.
Matthew Schinetti joining us of TSN. Jamie and Locker, we're live at Grey Cup in Winnipeg with our coverage all week long. Matthew, Trevor Harris, of course, a huge win would be so much to his legacy. The closer I get to kickoff, I like thinking of him retiring, I'm like, if he wins, who knows? Now I'm like 75% that if he wins the Grey Cup, he will walk into the sunset. Do you think I'm onto something, or do you think Trevor Harris still has more in the tank, win or lose, on Sunday?
I have been very blessed since I started covering the league in 2011 to see perhaps one of the greatest generations of CFL quarterbacks, Travis Lule, Mike Riley, Bo Levi Mitchell, Zach Collaros, and Trevor Harris. Of all of them, the one guy who takes care of his body better than anyone else, the one guy who has refined himself again and again more than anyone else, the one guy who, yes, he has a confidence and a bravado, and it is quiet and it's behind the scenes, and though it peaked out a little bit during the week last week when he was talking about this being Saskatchewan's time and not Nathan Rourke's time, Trevor Harris wants this. He wants this more than anything else. I watched him in 2012. I was in the Argos locker room when he was the third-string quarterback, and he was elated to win the 100th Grey Cup. He really was. In 2016, I'm sure if he and I were being honest with each other with a few adult beverages, yes, he was happy that the Red Blacks won, and certainly was happy in the moment for Henry Burris. I don't doubt that. But I also know he was disappointed in Rick Campbell's decision, because if you look back at that 2016 season, the guy who played a ton and really helped Ottawa get to where they were was Trevor Harris. He has gone to 4 or 5 different franchises. He has thrown over 4,000 yards in multiple franchises. 4 franchises, I believe. No one has done that in CFL history. He is the most accurate thrower, if not top 3, in CFL history. We used to talk about, oh, Trevor Harris can't get it done in the playoffs. He owns several playoff passing records in terms of accuracy. He is undeniably a part of that great class that I talked about, but a Grey Cup win would cement his legacy. A championship does for anyone. But for him, knowing not so much that he doesn't rate himself alongside his peers and a Grey Cup would put him at the same table as those guys I just mentioned, no. He knows he belongs there. He knows he's as good as those guys. And those guys know that he is as good as them too. But a Grey Cup win, especially as the starting quarterback of the Saskatchewan Roughriders, would absolutely cap off his career, and I wouldn't be surprised, Jamie, if after that he rides off into the sunset.
It's not going to be a factor of the weather this coming Sunday, but I'm curious, what was the coldest game you've ever covered in your career, Matthew?
I mean, although I wasn't on the sidelines, and it wasn't that bad in 13, I mean, although it was horrendous most of the week, Jamie.
Oh, my goodness.
That was... I still remember Joel Figueroa, the offensive lineman for the Hamilton Tiger-Cats, walking around without his shirt on early in the week and then getting frostbite, not surprisingly, later on in the week. The coldest game I've ever covered, it wasn't a playoff game. It was a October game in Hamilton about 10 years ago, 7, 8 years ago. It was windy. It was cold. Yes, I am back in the prairies. And yes, although quite nice here in Winnipeg today, it can get cold here. The dryness can hit you. There, I will argue it until my final breath. A damp cold, a wet cold, a minus 10 cold with the rain in southern Ontario with that wind coming off the Niagara Escarpment. It doesn't matter how many layers you wear. It will absolutely kill you. And our friend with TSN, Gord Miller, it's the only time during a broadcast that I've ever had the play-by-play guy at the very end say, well, we'd also like to thank our Matthew Schenetti for toughing it out there. Meanwhile, I'm on the sidelines right below him, literally shivering, thought I was going to be hypothermic. So that game, I forget who the Ticats were playing because I was freezing my butt off, and I don't know how long it took me to warm up, but I can tell you that hot shower was not hot enough that night. But in terms of playoff games, you know what? That 2017 game, I mean, we are all looking at the Canadian Premier League and certainly the amazing social media moment and the great game that was when Atletico Ottawa faced Calgary early, just this past weekend, I should say. But that 2017 Grey Cup is still the greatest, I mean, the most Canadian moment, a Grey Cup in a snowstorm in the nation's capital, Shania Twain riding around on a dog sled. It was cold, it was wet, but my God, it was so perfect.
Oh, it was perfect. I love that. That's why snow
You're
games
the
are
snow
the best
guy
games.
Too.
Snow games
on
are
your
the
side.
Best games.
Did you see the icicle kick this weekend? That was insane.
Oh, you know what? As a soccer guy, I have to say, and my kudos to everyone who works in the Canadian Premier League. There are some devoted people there. I know it's not what we're talking about, but that's been going around the world so many times. It is an absolute great showcase for our Canadian game. But there is really nothing like the snow. And I do peek at the weather. And when I know there's not going to be snow, I'm a little disappointed. But, God, I love being back in Winnipeg. Love being back in the Prairies. It's going to be a great game on Sunday.
Absolutely, Matthew. We'll see you around all week.
Thanks
you for joining
Matthew.
Us today.
Can't wait, guys. See you soon.
That is Matthew Schenetti on the sideline for the CFL on TSN as the 112th Grey Cup Sunday. 2 degrees, I think, is the expected high. -5 is a low.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Should be decent weather for the 112th Grey Cup. A lot more to come, including a little hockey chat with Drew Remenda this afternoon. Britton Gray is going to join us. And Scott Flory, he's getting ready for the Mitchell Bull, the head coach of the University of Saskatchewan Huskies. They're one win away from getting to a national championship. Vanier Cup, of course, being played in Regina next week. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker live from Winnipeg. It is the beginning of our Grey Cup coverage here in the Green Zone all week long to get you set for the 112th Grey Cup, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders against the Montreal Alouettes, of course. A lot coming up. Dave Naylor is going to be joining us this week. Awards night on Thursday. Hopefully some hardware coming Saskatchewan's way that night. Media day tomorrow, and you will hear it all, including... You gotta watch this coming up. Locker on the loose. We're setting Locker loose in Winnipeg this week. Watch our social media.
Pray for
Green
me.
Zone SK. I think you should do a scavenger hunt on Friday night. Try to how long it takes you to find some fan from each team.
I don't hate that.
Where you have to like take
chat,
a picture.
Chat with somebody from each.
All nine organizations.
That's not going to take that long.
It shouldn't, because sometimes it does take a while for Montreal, but with Montreal in the game, it shouldn't. But Toronto can be a little challenging at times, too, but there's usually a pretty good Argo contingent.
I was surprised at the West final how few BC Lion fans were in the building. I thought for sure there would be more.
It was too cold for the Vancouverites.
The Dome Kitties.